Okay, now, Rita has written this new book you're aware of, in which she says we're, creatures from other places, basically. And that's the first question I have. Every time I think about South America, people like the Aztecs and the Incas especially, you think they were Earthlings originally or transplanted here, or you have a clue?
Well, the curious thing that I've been studying is, again, with the ancient sites which predate any known culture and are of a sophistication beyond anyone's capability except maybe us now, is that there's also the phenomenon of cranial deformation or elongated skulls that you find. And especially around Paracas, where I had the UFO sighting, and studied these skulls intensively for more than 2 years, they genetically don't seem to be related to other people in Peru. So the question is, where did they come from? They also had reddish hair, and they died out about 2,000 years ago. So
I wonder why they died out.
They were as far as I can tell, the famous Nazca lines that people would have heard of, the Nazca culture, I believe, exterminated them. And
so
the Nazca themselves were
eliminated.
Yeah, basically.
You've made quite a career about those elongated skulls, and they are a mystery.
Very much so.
And people you've got some features about that as well as available. Okay, Rita, are you going down there for the tour?
Yeah, and I get to, touch everything and commune with an elongated skull. I'll think of you while I'm touching it, Jerry.
Yeah, please do. So people, this is a good chance not only to find out about elongated skulls and find out about Peru, and Brian will get serious here in a moment, but it's also a chance to get to know Rita.
Exactly.
And one of the things that is going to be really cool, there's a lot of controversy, especially around those skulls. Are they human? Are they alien? Are they some kind of human-alien hybrid? And, I believe, both through my psychic work and working as a psychic investigator doing ghost hunting stuff, that we will be able to actually commune and communicate with the spirits of those elongated skull people and get to know who they are some understanding of who they are. And so that's one of the things we're going to get to do. All the people that are there are going to get to strengthen their psychic skills.
Rita, when you're talking about psychic skills, does it help if you touch the object, like an elongated skull? And is that possible, Brian? Are they someplace where you can touch them, or are they locked away in a museum, or what?
Well, that's the best point, is the fact that when I started to get really interested in these skulls, I was really offended by the fact that they were always behind glass, and the museum people were like, no, you can't photograph them, you can't touch them, etc. So the little Paracas Museum that is part of the tour that we're going to be visiting, we have 38 of them, and they are they're behind glass, but we open up the glass cases and take them out so people can handle them.
So Rita actually would, for lack of a better term, get a feel for it. In other words, Rita, do you think this helps you with your psychic ability to actually reach out and touch something? Do you get vibes that way?
I mean, for me, all right, don't tell Brian this, but no, not really.
You mean Brian made a deal to send you all the way down to Peru?
To touch them. I mean, some people, it's really how you connect with things. And so some people, if you're doing a reading, they need to touch your hand. They need to have that physical contact. For me, I like people to sit in their own chair, and I energetically reach out. So whether they're behind the glass or not, I've never dealt with glass, but I don't know that it would bother me that they were behind the glass.
Okay, when
but
you
there
get back.
Are, but there are physiological things, like my little doctor brain goes off, and it wants to look and it wants to be able to turn them over and actually do kind of a physical examination. So there's the psychic part, but then there's, you know, doing more of an examination of the skull to look at, you know, the dentition or the cranium, you know, how big that cranium is, because some of them look huge and they look like, Jerry, my opinion is with some of them, if you had a head with the back of it sticking out so far, you know, you'd be looking up at the sky all the time or you would fall over because they look like they're big and they're heavy. Either that or you would have a really sore neck all the time just holding your head straight to keep that pointy part, you know.
Brian, compared to a regular human skull, or how much bigger are these skulls?
Well, the thing is there's so much variation to them because, again, conventional archaeology says that they're all the result of cradle boarding or cranial deformation, that it was simply a cultural practice. But we do have a few examples which are 25, where the cranial volume is 25 to 30% larger than any person of that time. And the shape of them are so natural, or the shapes are so natural looking that they would be almost impossible to create that shape through force. So I think what we're looking at is we're looking at the remnants of an ancient line of people that died out. And luckily the Paracas collection has a few of those long-lost relatives.
Now, I noticed you did a tour with Lloyd Pye one time on crystal skulls. Is that right?
No, actually, that's coming up in August.
Okay, we'll plug that too. Is this connected to the crystal skulls?
No, actually, Lloyd's study has been what's called the Star Child, which there's only one of them, and he's spent 14 years studying the Star Child, and he's found more than 25 non-human characteristics in it. So that's why he's intrigued to come to Peru to look at the elongated skulls as well.
Okay. Now I got the connection in my mind. And
so, Jerry, there's a question in the chat room from I Just Am.
Yeah.
Let me just read it. So I'll just read the question and answer it myself. I'll be the perfect show host.
Yeah.
Rita, a question for you. Do you think it could be possible that a spirit's energy may stimulate an image in the mind of the intended receiver by using its electromagnetic energy to create the image? Good question. I mean, I think that that's possible. I mean, as human beings, we all send, receive, and assimilate information. And so whether you have a physical body or not, you can still send that information, which can be received by, you know, somebody that has a physical body as well. So, yeah, I do believe that they can, you know, create the energy or create the image for you to see. So, yes, very much so.
Yeah, well, I mean, that leads to the question of different realities and what is real and what isn't. A lot of intelligent people deal with that subject. It's beyond my human ken, more or less, but there's a lot of interesting data out there about things like that. So, yeah, that's a good question. Let's get back to the tour itself. Now, they can make the reservations through your website, Rita, and also yours as well. Is that right?
That's
yeah,
correct.
And also there's also Infinite Connections, which is another site, which is on my website, which gives even more details about the tour.
Okay, now what's the deadline on somebody going on this thing?
Well,
the last possible minute?
No, we need to have the final people have to be registered 6 weeks in advance. We can't, we need to be able to book all the hotels and things.
So we're only talking a couple of weeks now.
Basically.
Right. So people need to think about it, go over and look at those websites, and think about making that tour. It'd be something that they can remember a lifetime. And let's get into exactly what happens here on the first day, second day, and so forth. What's the deal there? I mean, how does it work?
Well, basically, everyone flies into Lima, which is the capital city of Peru, and we spend a day in Lima itself. And then from there, Actually, I have to honestly have to look up the website here for a second. I've got so
I know,
many.
I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah, I've got so many different things going on. They all follow the same basic kind of pattern, but it's called basically the tour is called Forbidden Mysteries of the Ancient of the Inca World, and the concept is that we're looking at these ancient people called the Viracochas, who were great teachers in mythology, but we believe they were real people prior to the Inca. And so we're going to be following this this ancient path and discovering the elongated skulls and the megalithic structures along the way. So we fly to Cusco, and at Cusco is where we see the again, the incredible stonework that the Inca did not make.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but Cusco, is that in the mountains, or is that...
Cusco is inland from the ocean. It's located at 10,000 feet in the Andes.
That's what I was thinking.
And it's the ancient Inca capital.
But you know what? I'm going to just throw in a little UFO thing for you there, Jerry. You know, so they talk about the underground bases, like we were talking earlier about Dolce. You know, and there's supposedly underground bases in Peru, you know, with the entrance going through Lake Titicaca. But there are these tunnels that are well documented, not what's in the tunnels or where the tunnels go, but that there are these tunnels that are all over the Cusco area. And Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they uncover or re-uncover an entrance to one of those ancient tunnels recently?
Yeah, it was actually 10 years ago, but they found... both the entrance and the exit. One end of it is on top of this hill called Sacsayhuaman, which has the greatest megalithic stones in the Americas, some stones weighing 125 tons. And the other opening is underneath what is now one of the main churches. So, yeah, they did find the entrance at both ends. The thing is that the Inca filled in both entrances because they hid probably tons of gold in there that has not been found, and the conquistadors never found it. But that's actually one of the small tunnels. The bigger ones go from Lake Titicaca to Cusco, and there are even...
How far is that?
It's about 250 miles.
That's a big tunnel.
Yeah. And again,
How old would that tunnel be?
Well, again, these wouldn't be tunnels that the Inca would have built. They would have inherited them from a much more technologically sophisticated culture. I think they could be 10 or 15,000 years old.
I mean, according to the early Spanish chroniclers, the tunnels were ancient even to the Inca. So how old that is, we don't really know.
Have people been inside these tunnels? I mean, are they accessible? Is there like a flat surface to walk or drive on?
Actually, yeah. I met a man who went into one in 1994, and he only went in part way because it turned into a labyrinth. So he didn't have a flashlight or candle with him, so he went part way but then turned back because he was afraid of being lost. And there are a lot of stories of people having entered them and never coming back. And that's why the Peruvian government in 1994 sealed all of them off, because they're afraid that tourists or whoever would enter them, probably looking for the lost Inca treasure, and then never come back.
Unless you think the reptilians are down there, and then you'll just get abducted and you'll never come back, and you'll just become, you know, alien food.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, there's actually a lot of people say they've seen reptilians in those tunnels, not necessarily down there, but around the country. Even one up in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Even up in Missouri, there's a reptilian supposedly came out of a tunnel. I mean, you know, we get all kinds of people reporting things to us. Let's go on with the tour though here. The first day you arrive. And what happens? You got a nice hotel you stay in, I know.
Yeah, everyone lands in Lima, and we stay there, and we have a nice tour of the museums that are there to get an idea of the antiquity of Peru. And then after that, we fly to Cusco, which is the capital, and that's where most of the rest of the tour takes place, looking at the megalithic buildings, elongated skulls, and of course visiting Machu Picchu as well. So that's, you know, that's the, of course, for, you know, for real detail, people should look at the actual tour page itself, because it's quite in-depth, and we cover a lot of ground in a very short period of time.
How often do you do tours? I guess on a regular basis, you do this full-time, right, Brian?
No, we don't do it full-time, because my wife and I do 3 to 4 big ones a year of, you know, like 20 to 30 people, and then some smaller ones, but we don't, it would be too much work to do it full time, because we have other things we like to do, and we want them to be quality experiences, and we don't want to run a tour company. So they're very personal experiences, sharing our love and knowledge of the area with very special people.
Rita, how did you find Brian?
Well, you know, I was thinking about that the other day, how we actually connected. I mean, I know I've had him on the show several times. So do you remember how we actually connected the first time, Brian?
Well, I guess you weren't even on the show probably, Rita, and you probably contacted him somehow.
Well, actually, I don't remember exactly, but I do know that we had an immediate connection. And we have had that ever since then. So it's always a pleasure to talk to Rita because of her incredible charm, intelligence, inquisitive mind, and that's why she would be a wonderful person to have here, to share these things with.
Rita, yeah. He needs to be your PR person.
Exactly.
Well, you know, we do that for each other, you know, because I think his work with the monuments down there and especially the elongated skulls, you know. I mean, one of the things he's doing, which, Jerry, you should have him come back on to just do a whole show about the elongated skulls, is that they've been doing some DNA work on the skulls, and I don't know where that is, and you don't have to give away your secrets because, you know, you probably need to do another show when you get all the results in with me on Just Energy Radio, www.justenergyradio.com.
We're going to have a battle here for guests.
That's right. And, you know, it's so, you know, we've really connected just by each other's work. And actually, Brian wrote the foreword to Man Made, the Chronicles of Our Extraterrestrial Gods.
That's true.
He did. So.
Well, Brian, you're not from Peru originally, not from Hawaii either, are you?
No, I'm from the west coast of Canada.
That's what I was thinking. I thought I read that on a resume or something. So how did you get interested in Peru?
Well, it's been a lifetime interest in indigenous cultures. Growing up in North America, you know, was a wonderful experience, but I've always been interested in older, I guess you would even call them richer cultures than the one I grew up in, and so I became interested in the native peoples of the Americas, spent some time in Hawaii and Polynesia, and then was just naturally drawn by ancient stories to Machu Picchu in Peru. And I'm working on the connections between all of the Pacific ancient cultures now.
That's what I was trying to say. It seems to me that there is a connection between those Pacific Rim countries and the Pacific itself and South America. They seem to be intertwined.
Oh, very much so.
And so it makes you wonder how they got back and forth.
Well, they say they did a lot of sailing. That's the thing, is that Columbus was very much a latecomer, and according to Hawaiian and other Polynesian traditions, people have been sailing the Pacific for thousands of years. They didn't need to have compasses. They knew how to navigate with the stars, and so that's another clue to the much older history of our planet, is that people were circumnavigating the globe thousands upon thousands of years ago.
Well, what's interesting, I'm just going to throw one more thing in, is what's interesting is that where you find the megalithic structures, you would think naturally you would find them in China, Japan, if that's where the culture originated, and then it's stretching out into the Polynesian islands and then to places like Hawaii and Easter Island. But I'm not really aware, other than the agricultural terraces in China and the Polynesian area, of them really having a lot of megalithic structures, but you find those weird stones that you can't quite figure out how they carved them with the 25 sides and fit them together. We're pretty much in Peru and in Easter Island and in Greece and a couple of other places, but you know, that's your primary centers, which leads me to believe that, you know, it was more in the Americas where the major population was and maybe spread the other direction.
Brian,
high-tech to low-tech.
When we talk about the elongated skulls, you mentioned Easter Island. Those elongated skulls look like those spaces on Easter Island?
Yeah, actually, I've been on Easter Island twice and have been able to talk with local people, and they said that in the very distant past, there were a race of people who had elongated skulls, but they died out over time, a long, long time ago. But also, David Hatcher Childress and I wrote a book which covers the entire planetary existence of these elongated skulls, and they were all over the place. They were in ancient Iraq, parts of Europe, Africa, Melanesia, South America, Central America, etc. So it's a question of trying to time-wise piece together migration patterns of these very intriguing ancient people.
Do you think could they have been the giants that we hear about, or?
Yeah, they could have actually been descended from the giants, because there are a lot of again stories in South America and of course in the Americas about these ancient people who were very tall, much taller than most of the Native Americans, and there's also this preponderance of them having auburn red hair too, which is of course not a Native American characteristic.
Well, and then there's some of the material that comes out of Klaus Dohna's work, where he has those giant masks that came out of Bolivia or Colombia, Ecuador, one of them South American countries. And according to Klaus, when you held them up to your face, you couldn't see out the eye hole. But when you held, you know, but when you took into consideration the size that they estimate these giants were to be, you know, the 7 to 12 feet, then they would easily have been able to see through these eye holes. And so that just adds support and evidence that there was something there.
When we talk about the ancient Inca, we talk about the mystical things, like gods walking the face of the earth. But always think of the gods of mythology as probably being extraterrestrial creatures themselves, and we didn't know else, you know, any other way to describe them. What's your guys' take on all this stuff? I mean, what do you think is happening with as far as you know, the mythology of all of this. I mean, we can look at Greek mythology and Roman mythology, but it's pretty mythical around the world that there were people, you know, riding chariots in the sky and giants and on, you know.
Yeah, well, also, the thing is, what's important about, you know, oral traditions or legends is the fact that they're written as down as poetry. They're not written point by point as facts, and so you have to be able to interpret them. But definitely, when you talk, for example, that like the Titans of Greece, they were clearly beings. They weren't just stories that somebody made up, but you also have normal so-called people always battling these other people, battling the giants, as in David and Goliath, etc. So I think our history is much richer than what we're led to believe, and that there were ancient races of beings or people that were exterminated by probably our ancestors.
Well, you know, I am just working up a new little mini video lesson. If you go to my YouTube page, Just Energy Radio on YouTube, or Science Meets Spirit on YouTube, I've been doing these little video learnings, and so my new one that's coming out talks about why ghosts got the short end of the mythological stick. Because when you look at mythology, there is a belief that there were ghosts, or people were haunted by ghosts from deep antiquity, deep antiquity. However, people believed in the gods. People drew pictures of the gods. People wrote stories about the gods. People decorated cave walls with the gods. They did all this stuff with the gods and not the ghosts. And the question I ask is, if the gods and the ghosts are both these non-corporeal, fictitious, interdimensional being, then why aren't they treated the same? Because they would have appeared to people as being the same, but they're not. And it seems clear from traditional sources that the indigenous people could recognize a ghost, you know, but they venerated the gods. Why is that? I believe it's because at some point in their history, they interacted with these beings, you know, with these physical beings, and those memories have come down to us in the into the present, you know. But I don't think that they were just like heroes of the past; that they had powers and abilities far beyond mortal man, or at least good tools.
We've only got a few minutes left because I want to do something on what we did last week—a follow-up on the alien reproduction vehicles. We have a man who's put together what hangar S4, all of the hangars here. There's nine of them, I think, all together at Area 51, and what's in each of those hangars, and which ones did we build vehicles, and which ones came from UFO crashes. That's coming up here in a minute. But before we do that, I would be remiss without asking both of you to run over in kind of a thumbnail fashion the tour and how people can go to it and when the deadline probably is.
Go ahead, Brian.
Okay, well, the tour is an 8-day tour beginning at the beginning of June. And again, it's basically the Cusco and the Sacred Valley area, which is was the domain of the Inca, but also much more technologically sophisticated older cultures. And then after that is a 4-day tour of Nazca, where the famous Nazca lines are, as well as Paracas, which is where there is a very large collection of elongated, mysterious skulls. And that's the Paracas Nazca area is just south of Lima. So basically what we do is everyone flies to Lima. We stay there for a day. Then we go up into the highlands around Cusco and the Sacred Valley for about a week. And then it's back to Lima, and then down along the coast to really focus on the elongated skull beings. And that basically winds up the whole thing. And it's there is no one else who offers this kind of tour, because all other tours of Cusco and Peru give you the standard archaeological boring story, which doesn't make any sense anymore.
And you get to hang out with Brian and I, which is
That's
very
right.
cool.
And the whole thing lasts, you have it in two tiers, and there's an optional part, right? They stay longer?
Yeah, it's basically 8 days plus 4 days.
So you can come for 8 days, or you can stay for 12.
Exactly.
Right.
And so they can...
It's going to be amazing. That's all I can say, is it's going to be amazing because, you know, not just the sights and the sounds, but all the things people are going to learn, you know, about these different sites. You know, and earlier, Jerry, you know, I'm looking at the clock for you. Earlier, we were talking about doing the remote viewing, you know, and so we're going to be doing experiments to validate, you know, some of our thoughts, and we're going to have everybody participate in these experiments and bring their questions of what they want to learn about these locations. And so it's going to be really interesting in taking a very different look at these sites, not just from what's going on in the physical, but what's going on in the more etheric realm, the unseen realm. So
sounds good to me. Now give the website so they can check you out.
Okay, go ahead, Brian.
Oh, sorry. Mine is www.hiddenincatours.com.
And mine is www.soulhealer.com, unless you go to www.justenergyradio.com. But you really should go to soulhealer.com, because that's the portal to everything Rita Louise.
Okay.
Right, Barry?
Okay, we got it. Hey, thanks, both of you. I've enjoyed it. It's been an intriguing show. Appreciate it.
My
Thanks,
pleasure.
Thanks, Jerry.
Okay. Thanks for listening. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Cheers.